Hello, good evening. Nice to be back. Nice to see everyone. I'm happy. I was happy to be having a break, but I'm also happy to be back to my activities. Seems like a long time since I was here on a Thursday night, probably a month and maybe it's been. And I didn't do much sitting during the time when I was away. I really took a break from everything. I also had a lot of other things going on. I had, family activities during the holidays and unexpectedly members of my husband's family staying with us and other activities. But one of the main activities, which actually ended up being a great teaching for me, was that I had a resolution to clean my bookshelves. And it was in my books were in desperate need of being ordered, filtered, arranged. You can probably see the difference now. And that's only part of it. But it was quite an endeavor. And I say it was a teaching because I had avoided it for a long time. And I have a lot of books, not only in this room, but in other rooms in the house. And my husband has a lot of books, and we have books from our children that are still here. And, I have files and DVDs and all kinds of things, like we all do, more or less. And whenever I would, initially my bookshelves were arranged in a semblance of order. But then whenever I would get a new book, there was no place to put it. So it just got shoved on the shelf and stacked. And then there were two layers of books and not in any order. And a new bookshelf was added, and that was just random, so it was quite chaotic. So I decided I have time. I needed time. I needed to be able to just, it was almost like I needed to be able to settle, sit in it, in the mess. And so I did, avoiding it all throughout. Like I would start a little bit and then the rest of the day push it away. However, the deeper I got into it, I had to just keep going deeper into it. The floor was covered with books that I was taking down and trying to figure out how to do it. Files, folders, papers, trying to figure out. And then, as you know, when we do these kinds of things, I would get sidetracked looking through a folder, reading papers, looking at a book, then deciding if I wanted to keep the book or not. So now I have a big box of books that I don't want anymore that I will give away. And at one point, my daughter in the US was asking me how it was going. And I took a picture of my room with the office with the floor just covered with stacks of books and shelves in disarray. And I took a picture of it and sent it to her. And she messaged back, "The only way out is through." Now, my daughter does not practice Zen. But of course, she was raised by a mother who practices Zen. A stepfather who practices Buddhism. She lived in a Zen center for 6 years. She knows this. the only way out is through. So when I say, as I got deeper into it, I knew that the only thing to do was go deeper into it. That I could, there was no turning back now. And at one point I had envisioned, and when I started out, I was saying, I need another bookshelf. I need more place to, I need more shelves. That was my line. And my brother-in-law, who was staying here during the holidays with us, and my sister-in-law, my husband's sister, said, oh, you know, I have these great bookshelves at home, and explained how he does them, and said he would send pictures of it when he went back to his house. And so I was envisioning adding bookshelves, which is hard to imagine in this room, adding bookshelves, but it was going to be high up and over the door and all this stuff. But then, because I couldn't act on that immediately, I said, well, let's wait and see. Let's see if I really need more bookshelves. There was other spaces in the house where I could put books and files and things. So. And it became clear to me as I went along that limitation is essential. That, like the other night, there was the full moon. I don't know if anyone saw it. At least here in Paris, in France, there was the full moon. And so we can only say it's the full moon because we know what it looks like when it's not full. And we can only see the moon because there's darkness. There's a contrast. Otherwise, we would not see it. And we can only say it's full because we see it when it's not full. And it became clear to me that the limitations, so however we want to call that, the relative world, the forms, the frame, so we have a framework in our practice, which allows us to be free within that framework. And this is a reality of life, of our life as human beings in this world. Is there are limits. And as I used to always talk about how a river needs banks, otherwise it's not a river, it's just a puddle. But as soon as there are banks, then it has a structure, it has limits, it has form, and then that makes it what it is. And so actually giving myself this form within which to work. So I had a limited number of shelves, a limited number of closet space, helped me actually to experience the freedom of just doing it. It allowed me, if I didn't have all the limitations, I would have just kept all the books and probably left them. Initially, it became cluttered because of that. I wasn't respecting the limits. But when I took into account the limits, the number of shelves, the length of the shelves, the width, the height, the number of books, and then sub-limitations of, okay, so categories of books. Alphabetical order. All of these limitations, all of these forms helped me to organize in a way that is clear and free, actually. The end game of the whole arranging went very quickly, actually. Once I had spent days going through all of this in my head and making drawings in my notebook and taking books off shelves and stacking them and figuring it out and asking people, my my brother-in-law, who I mentioned, used to be a, he was trained as a librarian, but he worked in a bookstore. And so I said, so how should I arrange the books? Tell me what to do, you know? And he said, well, you know, there's lots of different ways. And I said, so how do you arrange your books? And he said, well, you know, he didn't really give me many details, but alphabetical order and by subject was basically it. But he had a different idea of how the shelves should go. And I am used to having the shelves go in a different way. So. But it was interesting to have these other suggestions, these other possibilities of ways of limiting it. I'm saying limit in the sense of forms. And it really, this was my practice for probably a week. And this was my koan. I stayed with my koan, just like any other koan that I've ever worked with. And the reason I could do it is because of my sitting practice, even though I wasn't really sitting during this period. But because I've done it so much and I do it so much, this I'm immersed in this way of being, of getting up from my cushion and applying it in my everyday life. And while I, during this process, this thing of limitation came to me, because during this process, I read something from Suzuki Roshi, who said, if you want to realize Buddha nature, some limitation is necessary. Without limitation, it's like without darkness, we won't see the full moon. So without the constraints of the everyday world, we won't realize Buddha nature. We won't realize the oneness without the structure, the limitations of form and differences. So acknowledging the limitations I had, the form within I was working, immediately it became much easier to eliminate the books I didn't want and to give myself even a structure then of, do I want this book or not? It was like, well, I have a book here that I haven't touched all these years and I have no real intention of looking at. So it goes. Or a book that at one time I thought that I wanted, someone gave it to me, you know, it was a used book and they didn't want it anymore, so I took it and I once tried reading it, no. So it became this process, because I had these limits, it was easier to do that. I also had the experience during the, at the beginning of the first confinement and the pandemic, when I was sick in bed and there was no way to get new books and I had all this time to read, I could only read books that I already had in my library. And so I spent the whole like 2 months just reading books that I had never read before that I already had in my library. And that experience helped me realize that these other books that I hadn't touched during that time, I wasn't going to. It was okay to let go of them, in other words, you know? I didn't need them, it was okay. I didn't need to cling to them. Someone once told me about cleaning out closets, actually. Actually, it was Joa's mother who told me this. Once that, and I don't know what her closets looked like, maybe Joa does, but she told me, oh, my rule is if I haven't touched a piece of clothing for 2 years, I get rid of it. And I don't apply that rule, actually. But I think of it often. I often think, oh, you know, maybe I don't need this piece of clothing. But and with the books, that helped me. It's like giving myself a structure, giving myself a limit. We have lots of natural limits. So we don't have to give them to ourselves, but we usually don't recognize them. So that's why we give ourselves a structure. In the sitting period, we sit for 30 minutes and then we just do that. We don't even have to think about it. We just do that. If we're sitting on our own without that structure, it's not so easy. You know, we tell ourselves that we will give ourselves a structure, but it's harder to keep to it. We need the support of others for that. We need the structure, the limits of the presence of the others to help us be free during those 30 minutes. So, I also realized that it became very clear to me in this process of I had turned away from this bookshelves and all that for so long. Partly because I didn't have time to sit down with it like I did now. And the time really helped me, like you know, when we do a retreat, that sitting for a week really opens up, clears things. And so this was kind of a retreat for me, retreat with my books and files and papers. And it became clear to me in a different way that our path, our practice is not about turning away from parts of ourselves or our lives or things that we struggle with. It's really a process of turning toward and engaging with everything. You know, as we say, it's to awaken to the wholeness of life, to be one with everything. And I realized that I was, you know, I was turning away from what I was struggling with, what in my head was a problem. I was turning away from it. It actually was not a problem. I just needed to give myself the space and the time to do it. So that too is a teaching, you know, what someone, my husband was telling me that one of his students wrote and said they're having a retreat at the end of February. He said, I'm not coming to the retreat. You know, we're trying to sell our house and there's a problem with it that I have to resolve. And so I'm not coming to the problem with, you know, part of the property is shared with some other piece of someone else, another plot next door or something. And so I can't come to the retreat. I'm not in the right space to meditate or something like that. And so my husband wrote back and just said, well, you know, okay, I note that you're not coming. I just might remind you that when your head tells you that you're not in the right space to meditate, ignore it, because your head will always tell you you're not in the right space to meditate. Meaning your limited mind, your thinking mind will always find a reason not to sit, always. And often it does it the most when we're struggling with something, when we're suffering, when we're in difficult situation. And that's exactly when we need to sit. Exactly. In the middle of it all. And we all go through phases where we don't want to sit. Oh, I have something else to do. Oh, I don't have time for this now. This is boring. This is a waste of time. Whatever, all of the reasons we tell ourselves. I don't feel good. I'm depressed. I'm sad. I'm angry. I'm really happy, so I don't need to sit, whatever it is. We just sit, no matter what, with whatever's happening, whatever arises. We just sit. Of course, sometimes we give ourselves a break. Like I said, in the past few weeks, I didn't sit. Yet, my intention was not to not sit. It's just I decided to give myself a break. And I ended up sitting without sitting anyway, because that's kind of how I just function all the time now. So, so that's what I did with my Christmas vacation or my winter break. It was a great learning process. It also is much more pleasant to have all my stuff organized more or less. It's not quite finished. I still have files and things to go through, but I know where things are now for a while until I start accumulating more. My desk is still not put in order, but that will come. So, anyone have any comments? Anything to share? Add? Question?
Joanna. Did you say without limitations and structure, we don't see the form? Did you say that?
Possibly, something like that, yeah.
It sounds to me very conceptual. It's in a way it sounds very conceptual, but in other way, it sounds like an evidence. I don't know if I have some much more to say about that, but if you could add something to what you said, maybe it could help me.
Okay. For example, when you weave something, you have a loom, right? You have to have that. Otherwise, you can't. do anything if you don't have the loom. Of course, you could do it with your hands, right? But the loom is a basic structure that we can build the cloth with, the tapestry, the rug, the picture, whatever it is. And then you have, I always forget, what we've talked about this before, with the, you know, the two, the horizontal and the vertical bits.
The warp and the weft.
Yeah, right. And though that's a, they're both necessary. One of them allows the basic structure, and the other one adds the design and the color, right? Something like that. Something like that. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the one that is stable and tough, oh yeah, that's right. It's, you know, it's stronger and tougher. Whereas the other one, you can, or maybe it's this one that's strong and tough, right? And then you can weave through the horizontal bits, yeah. And you can put in a variety, you know, an endless variety of pieces in there. The diversity is just phenomenal that emerges in that, which you know far better than I do. But that's an example of, without that basic form, that basic structure or limitation, the richness and the diversity would not be able to be experienced. If we didn't have our human body, another example, if we didn't inhabit this very limited shape and form, with all the troubles we experience with it, we wouldn't be able to experience the taste of ice cream, the beautiful sunset, the pain of loss. We wouldn't experience any of that without this human form that we have.
Okay, thank you. It's as I said, it's like an evidence, but it has, I feel it has a lot inside this way you said. I said it. I feel it's an evidence, but it doesn't. I feel it's an evidence, but I never put it in this so simple way, so compact way. So I was just trying to hear more from you, to see if it was what I was seeing in that, but I think it is, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably too what you, when you say it's so obvious, but at the same time you don't say it that way, I think it's probably what you're experiencing, yeah. Because we all do experience it all the time, but we don't pay any attention to it. And then we hear all these complicated things about the relative and the absolute and the, you know, enlightenment and delusion and all this stuff, but it's really very simple.
Thank you.
Joa?
Yeah, I just would like to share a very recent experience of cleaning my shelves, and I was trying to make more space. I had trying to make more space for other things, and I had a shelf in my office which was full of documents that is already dated, I don't know, like 8 years ago when I did my master's in wealth management. and everything was binded and stuff, very clean and very organized, and I thought, I haven't touched that for years. And maybe I should, it's time to let go of that. But really, part of me was thinking, maybe I'm going to need that again, or maybe I'm going to read it again because that might be interesting, even though a lot of the things like fiscal laws and regulations, which are definitely not up to date anymore. And I still have in my attic some things from my student years that I kept thinking maybe one day I'm going to do again the mathematical exercises that I did 20 years ago. And I still have that fantasy that sometimes I'm just going to open up these boxes and start to do economical mathematical exercises. And it's very hard to let go of that. So I got rid of some of it, but it's taking time. And some sheets, I took them out thinking, I still want to keep this just in case I'll have the time to read it again because it's really interesting. So like all my European law documents, I kept it because I really like law. But it's hard to let go. It's really hard to let go. I have a similar thing that what my mom had apparently, but also I'm adding also for the clothing, I'm trying to have a rule that when I add something in, I take something out. So that the constant stays on the constant surface, basically. But also, it's like thinking, yeah, as with the documents, have I looked at it for the past, in the past 5 years or so? Am I going to wear that again? But it's very hard to let go of it, really.
Yeah, it is. I think everyone was smiling and shaking their heads because we all know this thing of, oh, I might want to look at that. Or, oh, I really like that, so I'm going to keep that magazine article, but I'm not ever going to look at it again. But, I have stacks and stacks and stacks of the New Yorker. If anyone wants New Yorkers, just ask. I'll give them all to you. I just can't. I have. That's the next step is to get rid of them. So yeah, I know. It's interesting, huh?
And your fantasy is that maybe at some point I'm going to read that article from 1996 in the New Yorker, right?
Yeah, actually, it doesn't go back to 96 because like every year or so I throw them out. But yes, absolutely. It's that, yeah. Debbie?
This reminds me that Ram Dass tells a story. Actually, every time I think of it, it's all the same story is right under my bed. Apparently, he was moving from place to place. I don't know if in Portugal Ram Dass is a big guy, but I loved Richard Alpert. He was a sort of our guru of the 1990s, and he was moving around and living in different people's houses with all of his personal diaries that he would drag around from place to place. So after a while, he went through the same process of saying, "This is ridiculous. I've got to do something about this." And he decided he was going to throw them all away. He didn't need to have his diaries anymore. He was going to take them all, and he did. He took them all out to the trash. Just saying it, I get kind of nervous because I have to do this too, but I haven't done it yet. He took them all out to the trash and went to bed about 3 o'clock in the morning. Woke up and he went and got them all out of the trash. He couldn't stand it. He wasn't ready.
Yeah. Well, and in his case, wow, that's like a, those are important documents, probably. I hope that he kept them and like gave them to some university and there's archives somewhere. But yeah, I totally. And so what is it that, you know, I looked at and I hear us saying, so what is it in us that you know, is hanging on? And another thing from Suzuki, I've been quoting Suzuki a lot because the San Francisco Zen Center is regularly they're going through his archive of recorded talks, some of which became Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, but others that had never been transcribed. The sound is really bad, and so they've had to work to clean them and everything. But so on their site, there's stuff from him, and I've been reading it as it comes up. And one of the images he gives, which I really like, is, and the quote is exactly, if the center of the candle is covered by wax, the wick doesn't work. You have to get rid of wax on the center. So you shouldn't cover yourself with the idea of self. That the idea of self is the wax that covers the wick of the candle. And if the wick is covered, as we know with the candle, you know, sometimes you have to dig it out because the wick is buried in wax. And so it's almost like this part of ourselves that is clinging onto the stuff is the waxy part, it's covered with wax. And then when we can clean that wax off, then we can see if we really need to keep this thing or not. It might be totally legitimate to keep your math exercises from 25 years ago. Why not, you know? Or your wealth management stuff, you know? I'm just referring to Joe, but because who knows? That might be really useful Dharma teaching somehow. The point is, so yeah, we keep it, but for what purpose? Most of my stuff now that I keep is either for Dharma teaching or for writing workshops or family related stuff. But so what's, it's not just, oh, I might read that New Yorker article. Although, you know, so I have to clean that part of the wick off too. But, no, it might be really useful. What's the point of keeping it, I guess, is a help, is a limit, is a structure that we give ourselves then? Is it just because I like it? Or is it because, oh, you know, this might be important. Like Ram Dass, and that's a fabulous archive, Ram Dass's personal journals from, wow, his whole process. Carla, hello.
Well, when you were talking, I was remembering the similar experience I had maybe 2 years ago when I rent my house in the city where I lived before. And I have to empty the house for the new person who is going to live there. And at the beginning, it was very overwhelming because I couldn't bring all those books to the new house. And I suddenly saw myself in the middle of so many books and didn't know what to do. And then because I had to get rid of many of them, I just decided more quickly, I don't want this anymore, I don't read this anymore. And it became very liberating after that feeling of overwhelming. And at the same time, I felt it was a very intense journey, because when you see the books, you read some of them and you look and there are some photos inside or something you wrote, and you realize that this was on the past. I'm not this person anymore. I change, and it's easier to get rid of something that it doesn't speak to you anymore. It's done. So in the end of all of that, I was filling many bags, and I gave all the books to the local library, and I didn't have any idea how many books they were. And after that, they sent me a letter with the list, and it was like 150 books I gave them. I have no idea. And it felt even better to know that I could share those books with someone. So I totally relate with your experience. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's beautiful. Because it is, you know, it's like generous, actually.
Yes, it felt good.
Letting go is actually an act of generosity.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. And sometimes circumstances help us. You know, the fact that you had to leave the and clean it out, that helped you to do that. And if the circumstances are really, really tight, you know, if the limits are really tight, then that's even more helpful. Like Lara was telling me, Lara, who had a baby 2 weeks ago, was telling me that life is not difficult for her. She just answers when the baby cries and needs to eat, she feeds it. When the baby needs the diaper change, she changes it. She gets up in the night when the baby needs it. It's no problem, you know? She was, as Lara can be, you know, Lara can be like so cool and sometimes, but it was genuine. It was really, yeah. Sometimes the situations are so, so limited, you know, and having a baby, I'm saying that it's a limit. It's that it's extreme. You know, the baby is completely dependent on its mother. And fortunately, in our society, Lara has the option of, for 3 months, she can be entirely at the disposition of the baby. She doesn't have to work. She doesn't have to go anywhere else. She even told me that she sets her alarm sometimes because the doctor said the baby shouldn't sleep more than 3 hours without eating. The baby is a girl, her name is Olivia, and so Lara sets her alarm for 3 hours in case the baby doesn't wake up and wakes her up and feeds her. No problem. That's an extreme situation. Sorting out our books and papers and things is not as clear. Sometimes. As we say in the Zen poem, the perfect way is not difficult. It just dislikes picking and choosing. And the limits help, I mean, it helped me a lot to pick and choose. And it sounds like with Carla too, it helped her a lot to just, yeah, it was obvious.
I see that many of us decided to arrange the places in this time. Normally, I make that I have I want to do that in this time, in December, January. It's a feeling bring me to that, to arrange things, to clean things, to And I do that also. I do that with this room, stay the same, but I take in my hands things that I didn't take 10 years and it's some I I show that book Rashi, this is my translation from my first my Zen book. My first Zen book that someone gives to me, in French. I translate to Portuguese every morning a little bit, and this is this left. I take that 10 years ago, and I begin to see things. And oh no, I don't want to. I don't have time because I go. Yet it's the time to cleaning and to let this book in his place. But is not in the same place. It's the book was not to see and. Since that is all the time here with me. And sometimes I read a little bit. Yeah. It changed. So many things are changed in these 10 years. And the room, it seems the same room.
Trisha has her hand raised.
Oh, okay. I wasn't looking. Trisha.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Joa. I don't have my video camera.
Yeah.
I don't know the name in English. Got out of order. And I was, because of what Hoshi was saying, the baby is hungry, feed him, the nap, you know, just do it. And obviously, and I'm ill, and I was sleeping and feeling, you know, shivering a bit. And I say, I'm missing my sangha, I have to see them, but my camera doesn't work. I think it's because I'm a bit ill also, you know, when these things get really important. And I remember, oh, I have my phone. In the phone I have the camera, but I won't see them all. And I was trying over there, it wasn't working, and the time was going. I was already, this was about 7:43, you know. Okay, Krisha, just do it. Pick up your computer and open. And I did it, and I'm very happy. I was missing you all, so thank you.
Thank you, Krisha. Yeah. Debbie?
I can't help but going back to what Joe was saying about why am I keeping this and do I have to throw it away? I have a few things like that. I mean, I don't know how much room you have and what you're talking about. But I have a few things that I have absolutely no good reason to keep. But I'm every time I come across them, I'm so happy I have them. So I do have a good reason to keep them.
Good. That's
I have a couple of love letters from, I used to teach students who didn't speak French to kind of, but did speak a little bit English to kind of get into the French school system. And so they wrote their letters in their version of French, and I kept a couple of them. And every time I come, well, in the beginning, I'd say, oh, you throw all this student stuff out. And I'm so glad they're there. They're so precious. I don't know. I think you should give in to your heart in these cases. If you really don't want to throw it, keep it.
Yeah, that's reason enough. Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely valid. You know, when I'm talking about this sorting and cleaning, it's because it became oppressive. I needed to eliminate because it was oppressed. I was oppressed by it. It was weighing on me. And that's a sign that, okay, there needs to be some change here. Marlene. You have to unmute.
When I left being a teacher for so many years, I had to bring all my stuff from the school to my house. And it took me, I don't know, 3 times in my car to bring things, then rising the stairs, 3rd floor without elevador, how do you call it?
Elevator.
And it was really so heavy and yeah. And for a year, I think they stood there inside some shell. I put everything and it was a lot of paper. And one day I decided, well, I have to do something about it. And I started to clean and deciding things. But just to say that I must have started for, I don't know, 4 or 5 times to get rid of the things. Because the first time it was, no, I will keep this, and it was in the other pile. And then next time it was, no, maybe this, I don't need this anymore. And I took it outside. It was really like a fight. And suddenly I realized this had been a burden in my house and in my, how I wouldn't need those things anymore. So the final time I get rid of things, it was really easier. But the beginning, it was like a step-by-step thing. I will do this. I don't know, maybe this stays for a while. But then I realized, no, it has to go. So many papers. Poor trees. At the end, I just said, oh, poor trees. Lots of paper. Yeah.
Yeah, a process. Again, you gave yourself a structure, this pile, and then move it over to the other pile, and then another pile. And that's part of the limits. You know, you're setting the limits to help you do it. Yeah. Okay, time is up, the limit. So I guess we'll chant the vows and say goodnight. Thank you.